Support for COVID Riff comes from Ulmer's Drug and Hardware, offering a wide variety of immunizations, including the COVID-19 vaccine, beginning in March. Appointment scheduling will be available online on the Ulmer's website on March 4th, proudly serving the Homer community since 1977. Additional support for COVID Riff comes from South Peninsula Hospital, reminding listeners testing for COVID-19 helps slow the spread. If experiencing any related symptom, get tested with easy drive-up testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at 4201 Bartlett Street, the lower level of the specialty clinic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to COVID Riff, Session 3. I'm Rob Downey, a family practice MD and Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner. My co-host is Lauren Carroll, a public health nurse 3 here in Homer, Alaska, and also a fellow in the Master's in Public Health program at Johns Hopkins. Hello, Lauren.
Hey, Rob.
How's your day going?
Good.
Well, I just want to welcome everyone to session 3. I want to remind everyone, sessions 3 through 6, that the things that you and I discuss today are things that people should discuss with their medical provider about whether or not these principles or ideas are sensible for them. Also remind everybody that we're talking about mitigation of resistance to COVID, resilience in the face of it, and a good recovery. We're not discussing cure. So I'm going to cover the first 5 minutes or so, Lauren, and I'm going to introduce people to today's two patients, not real patients, but invented for the purposes of illustrating these principles we're talking about. And so we're discussing Tommy Tomato and Christy Carrot. They are a couple in their 30s, and they both eat the standard American diet. So they have cheeseburgers and pizza, that sort of thing, and lasagna, mousse with vegetables, variety. The difference is that Tommy eats few vegetables. His primary source of red vegetables is ketchup. Now, Christy starts hearing a lot during the pandemic about vegetables, and it's everywhere. It's in what she's reading. It's on her podcast. She just keeps thinking, this is so interesting that if I eat the rainbow, about 4.5 cups a day, 9 half-cup servings of fruits and vegetables of different colors, it's going to help my immune system. So she just starts doing it. First, it's kind of hard, but she trades some of Tommy's mousse to a neighbor for some frozen greens. And then she remembers that she froze some raspberries out of the backyard of their rental place. So now she's got some red. She has trouble finding purple vegetables because she doesn't like eggplant, until she realizes that red cabbage is actually purple and it's sweet and delicious in salad. So now she's good to go there. Then she starts making skillet fries made with healthy, savory things like coconut oil, avocado oil, sesame oil, things that aren't damaged at high smoke points or high skillet temperatures. Then she starts adding some really delicious salads at lunch and finally learns to love salad. She gets away from that iceberg lettuce and anemic tomato, puts a lot of colors in there and makes it savory with nuts, hard or aged cheeses, extra virgin olive oil, that kind of thing. She also learns about Terry Walls, who's done work in the Midwest with veterans, helping them reverse multiple sclerosis. And they're not eating organic vegetables to do this. Now they do when they can, but Christy Carrot realizes, oh my gosh, I just need to get my hands on these vegetables. If they're organic, great. If they're locally raised, great. But one way or another, I'm gonna get my 4.5 cups a day of these different colors. And then she also starts making living food. And she does that with her grandmother's sauerkraut urn. So yogurt, kombucha, kefir, kimchi, sauerkraut, certain kinds of pickling, all kinds of cultures have this. And finally, Christy's not using supplements. She finds them expensive and confusing. So that's a setup then for some principles that are gonna come up over the course of today's conversation. And later on then we're going to be talking about what happens when Christy and Tommy encounter SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus, and what these differences in vegetable consumption do to separate Christy and Tommy's trajectory through that exposure. So I'll hand it off to you to start then into this next component.
Wow, that's interesting. I thought I'd squeeze in maybe a disclaimer here that I am a state employee, but I'm actually on break, so I'm taking off my state employee hat, and I'm more speaking from the perspective of being just Lauren, a guy that lives in Homer, and maybe also I was recently elected as president-elect of Alaska Public Health Association, so I'm definitely wearing that hat, and American Journal of Public Health think tank hat. But as you were talking about those two characters, Rob, and having known you and worked with you a little bit throughout the past few years, I can hear there are several potential resilience factors that will play in. I'm hearing some foreshadowing in your establishing these two characters. But it's, that's kind of your world, being so tuned in to the individual. But, you know, it makes me think of there's this particular Swiss cheese model that I recently got exposed to. I think it's pretty popular, but the idea is this, and it translates to individual, family, and community level resilience factors. But the model itself is this. If you were to line up several slices or chunks of Swiss cheese, these are the ones that had the big giant holes in them, there would only be a particular set of circumstances between and through these Swiss cheeses in which that you could point an arrow straight through and actually get that arrow clear through. And so it's kind of a negative-based model, but I was first exposed to it when looking at a model that unpacked how an oil rig blew up and caught fire near Texas several years ago. But each of these slices might represent like safety, certification, and licensure, training of staff, and how to incorporate visitors onto that particular rig. And even the physical location of the oil rig as it relates to fault lines, et cetera. When thinking about things from a population or individual level, there are a series of factors in which you can highlight in order to increase resilience, to decrease the chances that there's a negative outcome. So when I think about in terms of COVID-19, which is the word that actually means, the definition of COVID-19 is the acute disease process caused by that SARS-CoV-2 virus. You know, the kind of protective layers, just a whole bunch of them that I'm kind of thinking about in regards to COVID outcomes, might be from a population focused lens, like tribal councils from Alaska Native communities, transportation like air transportation and water taxis, an individual and a family's overall ability to access health care, social cohesion and civil participation, and there are several ecological determinants that plug in there too that I'm sure will begin to unpack throughout the course of the series, and like peer-to-peer support for folks that may be challenged with a substance misuse addiction. So, you know, COVID, like no time other, highlights the impactfulness and the importance and the resilience that each of these slices kind of represents. Is that ringing with you, Rob?
Yeah, it does. And I think it fits with this idea then that our conversation is speculative, and yet at the same time, I think most of our audience can resonate with this idea. So if we think about a water taxi business, and maybe one day there's a guest that nearly falls in the harbor, it'd be commonsensical for the business to add some sort of written checklist for the person that signs them in, or the boat's pilot or captain that day, to have a little checklist. Does everybody have their life jacket on? Is the boat lashed properly, et cetera? These are adding slices of Swiss cheese so that there's more slices, fewer chances that the arrow's going to get through and somebody's going to fall in the water. So there's just a lot of common sense in this idea, and we kind of do this all the time. If somebody in our family slips going out the front door, we add some risk mitigation slices of Swiss cheese with our sanding protocols or whatever. And I think people are going to find through sessions 3 through 6 that the things that we talk about may feel to them like today, you know, just eating fruits and vegetables. It may feel to them like, oh my gosh, yeah, if I can add those slices of Swiss cheese and have a better, potentially have a better outcome, why wouldn't I?
You know, I have to admit, I've actually, you know, just talking to you a little bit more than typical the past few weeks, I've actually been eating more fruits and vegetables. Nice work, Rob. You're impacting me.
A proximity effect or something like that. Well, as we go then into this next part, it's also worth mentioning those things that you flagged. Anybody who already is part of those things or cares about them, again, if they act on those components that are already here, those slices of protection, they're helping themselves, they're helping their community. So there's lots of ways to work together to mitigate the effects of this virus. I wanted to mention to everybody that it's all well and good for a functional medicine MD to get on the radio and talk about functional medicine, but it's probably still a good idea to point to good studies so that it's not just one doctor sharing their experience. And the best big study, to my knowledge, that's been done so far on the effectiveness of functional medicine came out of the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine, and it was published in October of 2019. In JAMA Network Open. Journal of American Medical Association is one of those flagship publications in the medical world. Things that end up in JAMA and New England Journal of Medicine are considered the best of the best scientific data. So in the year that this was published and leading up to it, they took 1,500 patients in the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine and 5,500 patients at Cleveland Clinic's Family Medical Center, and they used a tool developed by the National Institutes of Health in 2004 called PROMIS, which stands for Patient Recorded Outcomes Measurement Information System. And this measures outcomes by people saying whether or not they have good mental health, good energy, they can handle their activities of daily living. And National Institutes of Health has determined that this is a useful way to measure people's health. And over the course of a year, functional medicine patients and the family medicine patients, functional medicine folks had equal or better reported quality of life scores over that year. I think it's reasonable to say you're going to feel good and handle your activities of daily living if you can breathe easily, you're not wiped out. So that's one reason to think again, functional medicine certainly got a place of offering people a bigger toolbox in the pandemic. And then just to boil down a bunch of that potentially kind of complex stuff about APOE4 and all that from session one. The two keys to being susceptible to COVID-19 via the SARS-CoV-2 virus are silent inflammation and having the immune system be disordered or dysregulated. So folks can think of silent inflammation as what's measured if you get a high sensitivity C-reactive protein measured, an hsCRP, at the Rotary Health Fair. And this has been in place for a long time because heart attack and stroke risk are known to be tied to an hsCRP level greater than 0.1 via the scale they use at the Rotary Health Fair. And then silent inflammation is genetics. We talked about APOE4, but there's a lot of other genes. And this isn't inflammation we can feel. That's why it's called silent inflammation. Stress management or lack thereof contributes. Inadequate sleep, inadequate social connection, that's been called the new smoking, suboptimal food plans, low-grade contaminants that we're exposed to, pesticide, you know, all kinds of things out there in the environment, fire retardant in clothing, our sugar consumption levels, supra-optimal levels of alcohol consumption triggered by stress. So we also know that this silent inflammation, it's part of dementia risk, as we discussed, cancer, developing diabetes, overweight, obesity, depression and anxiety, chronic fatigue. And then these diseases feed the inflammation. So now the silent inflammation is like this self-feeding loop that needs to be broken. Another theme that'll come up 3 through 6 is the immune system It's designed to find a needle in a haystack in terms of threats. That's what the immune cells in the body do. And the immune system has sort of three layers. It's got the barriers, these slippery surfaces like the lining of the nose, the mouth, the big airway going down to the lungs, the gut. And those are loaded with antibodies and protective agents. Then all over the body, there's these innately immune cells. We're just born with them, ready to rock, ready to protect us. And also our immune system can learn on the fly. That's called acquired immunity. Well, to understand how functional medicine and social determinants of health tie into what we can do to protect ourselves, it's probably easiest to understand that the immuno-inflammatory system in toto is pretty much like the armed forces or security teams. Immune systems doing surveillance and threat recognition, remembering threats and doing targeting activities. And then the inflammatory system is countering the threats. It's using the antibodies to glom onto actual threats. It's using white cells to engulf invaders, signaling molecules that float all over the body, keeping teams coordinated, generating heat in inflame zones to try to create unfavorable temperatures for invaders. Same with fever, swelling, big issue with COVID-19, leaking fluid into these danger zones by opening up little gaps in the blood vessels. That's what's happening in the lungs of the unfortunate people with COVID-19 who get those troubles. Part of this is like science fiction, as we've alluded to. I mean, this is mind-bendingly weird, the whole process. So this virus, it's not alive. Viruses aren't alive. It's this non-living entity that exists just to make more of itself. So it's very strange. It's got this spike protein that we've all seen in the media, that little white sphere with those red projections, those are the spike proteins, and they know to break open once they've gotten close to the target by an actual molecule that floats around bodies. These spike proteins coat themselves in sugar to hide from antibodies. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines target these spike proteins. Once they actually get to our cells, there's a doorway in called ACE2, and they kick the door down, sneak into the cell. Unfortunately, that ACE2, it also is a preventer of fluid flooding into places it doesn't belong. So the way that the virus sneaks in is very well designed. And then some of the weird things the virus does is it'll actually fuse with our own cell walls to get its contents in and take over our cellular machinery to make more of itself and finally get back out into the lungs and out and on to the next target. We're again emphasizing mitigation, not cure. And if we want to think about the differences then between Tommy and Christy, she's got all these veggies coming in and Tommy doesn't. We've got tons of great clinical science telling us that the colors in the vegetables that Christy is consuming, they're profoundly anti-inflammatory, better than medications, better than supplements. The fiber in the vegetables is feeding the good bacteria in the gut, what we call the beneficial gut microbiome. And those good bacteria, they're the drill sergeants that teach our immune system to be rested and wise and targeted because they've been around with us for millions of years. So they're the core to our understanding of friend from foe. And those good bacteria, they eat the fiber in the vegetables and the leftovers, the short chain fatty acids, well, those are fuel for the gut cells. So now the home of the good guys, the beneficial bacteria, is vital. And finally, these living foods, the sauerkraut, etc., we talked about at the beginning, they're adding more good citizens to the gut so that the immune system is even better trained and there's less inflammation. So those are some kind of fun things to think about. Now it's a chance, again, Lauren, for you to talk with us all a little bit about some related ideas with food and public health.
Wow. That's fascinating. Again, like kind of find myself in this place with you, Rob, where it's like a ping pong match where, you know, as you were talking, all these talking points, I was like thinking that many of them could be referring to an individual or with slightly different framing, the context could be an entire population, which is fascinating. So it kind of holds true that these Oh, weaknesses can also be highlighted as strengths at a community level or an individual when faced with something like COVID-19. You know, and also all your mentioning of floods and moving of these fluids kind of made me reflect on the two back-to-back 100-year floods that we experienced on the Kenai Peninsula in October and November of 2002. It's pretty fascinating. This U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, commented that the 100-year flood, it's the standard used by most federal and state agencies for zoning, floodplain management, bridge design, and emergency preparedness. They go on to unpack or define what a 100-year flood is. And so in this context, the term, it's a statistical designation, meaning that there's a 1 in 100 chance that a flood that size is going to happen in any given year, and it's determined for magnitude of past floods. And these happen back to back, you know, so some of the heaviest rainfall was towards the end of October in floods and the first part of November. And so there's a lot of implications here, and they're layered, and some of them have to do with food insecurities or food securities and other variables too. So, you know, like we're familiar with here is there's one road in and one road out. So our access to food is severely reduced if there's any destruction to the road system. But also it highlights, you know, that we in Homer or Southern Kenai Peninsula have multiple resilience factors. Like for example, the Homer Farmers Market was established back in 2000. And also more recently, the Food Hub was established, which not only increases access to foods locally grown, but also stimulates our local economy. And other social determinants of health, like promotes social cohesion and a sense of connectedness. And those all kind of plug directly into what you're talking about. Yeah, and it kind of makes me think, too, in regards to, you know, this scenario of our history that we went through several years ago with the two floods could also break that up into, you know, SAMHSA has a different way of defining health, and they define it as wellness, and they break it up into 8 different variables. And that was actually adopted by MAP, a Southern Kenai Peninsula Steering Committee, several years ago. And the idea there was to provide a framework for not only assessing, but being able to promote health from different dimensions throughout the community. And I think that we're seeing that particular framework and approach in a different light given the current crisis or pandemic. Yeah, thanks, Rob. Those are kind of very parallel in my mind.
Well, that's what I think makes this fun. And again, hopefully exciting and interesting to our audience, these fascinating parallels from the related worlds of public health and functional medicine. I'm sure our audience is waiting with bated breath to know what happens to Tommy and Christy, so I shouldn't forget to mention that. They both end up with COVID-19, and she's sick for about 3 days and kind of shrugs it off. And Tommy's sick for about 3 weeks, can barely get off the couch. So for today's purposes of trying to make the explanatory cases simpler rather than more complicated, we're gonna give Christy credit for those vegetables making the difference. And then as we segue out today, we've talked about how veggie consumption decreases inflammation, improves immune function. Everyone knows it's safe to eat your vegetables. Probably the trouble is that many of us felt some sort of rebellious need not to do it because our mothers or grandmothers told us to. So I hope maybe the science will reinvigorate that joy for folks or give them a first-time taste of it. And I like it that today's ideas are, I see them as attuned to the community because they're not supplement-focused. We're talking about the idea you don't have to be wealthy to be healthy. And getting those vegetables from anywhere is good. Garden or organic, that's terrific. But frozen veggies happen to be a little better in nutrient density than canned if people are making choices at the market. And this is really just about adding the good. So I want to give you a chance for last couple of minutes and any closing comments, Lauren, before I hand it off to you. I'll thank our audience, thank KBBI for this opportunity, and give you a chance for final comments and wrap up. Don't forget to let folks know what we're going to be doing next week.
Oh, nice. Yeah, thanks, Rob. It's been another fun half hour. You know, I've been thinking in regards to access to vegetables. You know, buying nice organic vegetables is good, but buying them from someone you know is even better. So maybe I'll just end it on that note.
Well, next week we're going to talk stress. So we hope you'll join us for the story of Cindy Stress Mistress and her business partner, Marty Mello. Have a good day, everyone. See you soon. Thanks again, Lauren.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us for COVID Riff. I'm Rob Downey, a family practice MD and Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner. My co-host is Lauren Carroll, Public Health Nurse 3 here in Homer, Alaska, and also a fellow in the Master's in Public Health program at Johns Hopkins. We thank our underwriters, Homer's and South Peninsula Hospital, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday at 3 o'clock. You can access all of these COVID Riff programs at kbbi.org.